Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noll. We have a lot to share today, and I'm hopeful that with each of the different issues I take on, you'll call in and give us your opinion, your insights. We have a lot of very intuitive people, a lot of people with, I think, some clarity of mind. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We begin with a study about cordyceps and how it's used in traditional medicine and how it's used to fight cancer. This is from the Shanghai Institute for Biological Sciences. The Chinese scientists have found evidence that a fungus used in traditional Chinese medicine, widely sought by the public for its healing powers, also carries anti-cancer benefits. The scientists found there was an interaction between two anti-cancer compounds in the fungus, cordyceps, let me spell it for you, C-O-R-D-Y-C-E-P-S, militaris, M-I-L-I-T-A-R-I-S. Now, what they found is that this goes back a long ways. There's lots of study on this. They've actually used the chemicals within the phytochemicals within the cordyceps to fight different types of cancers, including leukemia. And, quote, for the first time, we decoded the biosynthesis mechanisms of cordyceptin in the fungus. And during the research, we unexpectedly discovered what is called pentostatin. That's according to the researcher. And these two compounds coexist in fungal cells in the form of a protector and protege. That is to say, cordyceptin is synthesized with the coupled production of pentostatin to protect the stability of the former. What does it mean, lay language? It means that cordyceps, a fungus, has been used for thousands of years for its immune-enhancing ability and energy-strengthening properties. It vitalizes the qi. If you just feel that your energy isn't what it should be, cordyceps is one of the things that has historically been used. It goes clear back to the Ming Dynasty, and the Ming Dynasty was what, between 1368 and 1644. But it can also help with cancer. Now, here's the interesting thing. Any natural, meaning no toxic side effects and coming in some way from nature, that can help with the intervention of a disease to help stop it, like vitamin C in the cold, or vitamin D3 in influenza, or zinc in cancer, can also be used preventatively to prevent those very conditions, keep your system strong. Another good study today comes from the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute, and they found that the omega-3 fatty acids could boost the IQ for preterm babies. And that's good. Preterm babies, by the way, are more likely to have lower IQ scores and cognitive impairments compared to long-term children. And this was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So that's one of the reasons all pregnant women should make sure that they're making enough of an effort to get the DHA in particular, as well as the omega-3 fatty acids in their completeness into the body each day. I suggest maybe 1,500 milligrams. That's a moderate amount. Columbia University and Irvine Medical Center and Duke University published an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that a crossword puzzle beats computer video games in slowing memory loss. And so I don't know how many young people have ever looked at a crossword puzzle. I'd love to see how quickly they could solve it, but all of the rest of us grew up with crossword puzzles. Well, now there's some evidence in this randomized controlled trial led by a professor of psychiatry and neurology at Columbia and also a professor of psychiatry and medicine at Duke that says people average age 71 trained in doing web-based crossword puzzles demonstrated greater cognitive improvement than those who were trained on cognitive video games. So, that's good. Crossword puzzles. Now from Goosehawn Medical University, An article from the Frontiers in Endocrinology shows that atherosclerosis, erectile dysfunction, are associated with a low amount of vitamin D3. So if you're having problems, a lot of men do, with erectile dysfunction, and you're also at an increased risk of atherosclerosis, make sure you're getting your vitamin D3, because it can make a difference for both. And a nutrient called carnitine, by the way, it's used mainly to produce energy for the heart and brain, could improve cold tolerance. University of Utah, article published in Cell Metabolism, reported research findings from the University of Utah School of Medicine that reveal carnitine, and you can get a vegan form of carnitine, in the body's response to cold temperatures. Quote, cold-induced thermogenesis is an energy-demanding process that protects endotherms against reduction in ambient temperature. We found that the liver undergoes a metabolic switch to provide fuel for brown fat thermogenesis by producing this acetyl-carnitines. So, putting some L-carnitine into your body each day, which is a good idea, 500 to 1,000 milligrams, helps your heart, helps your brain, and now also helps your temperature. And from King's College London, this is the second study I've seen about being around birds is linked to lasting mental health benefits. Yes, just being around birds. Now, some people have birds in their home, and that's enjoyable for them. I don't like the idea of birds tied up in a little cage. Some birds, especially macaws, like to go into a place at night, and then you put a sheet over them. But also, birds need room to fly. And birds love people. Oh, they create a relationship with you. And, you know, they depend upon you. And they like seeing you and being near you. So a person that has thousands of birds, when I go out to the barn each morning, start preparing everything, there are the cats sitting there in front of the barn. Why don't you eat a rat? No, we like the wild salmon you give us better. And they're a hoot. These were two feral cats, both near death, had all kinds of problems, took them into the vet, got them neutered and got them cleaned up, and now they're just as happy as can be, and they just get along with everything, including the dogs. It's just wonderful to have these creatures, these wonderful sentient creatures in our lives. Birds also, they're very smart. But there's a big stanchion of bamboo, and it's huge. It's about 65 foot high, I'm guessing about 40 feet across, and they live in there because predator birds can't get to them, including hawks that I see flying around. And there's probably 200 doves alone in there, and they're all doing those beautiful cooing sounds. You're just working, even working out, and you hear that. It's just, it's very relaxing. And that's what this study from King's College London is saying, that you're going to be a happier person, you're going to have better health, and you're going to be more positive. And they looked at 26,000 assessments, you know, and yeah, being around birds makes a difference. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going a little shorter today, but by the way, if you want a lot of information, more information than you could absorb in a year, you just go to prn.fm or garyandall.com, and we have all that information, both spoken as commentaries, but also printed out in transcript form. So you've got that. We're going to take a break. We have a lot of interesting things coming right at you, so please stay with us. I'd like to thank all of you who are tuned in right now, who listen and share the information. We don't do any advertising. I don't do interviews with the media because I don't trust them. I used to. For 30 years, I did thousands of interviews all across the country and tours. Back then, we didn't have satellite tours. Satellite tour changed everything. You go into a little room, they have a camera on you, and then your publicist says, okay, now this is Jim and John, morning show in Kansas City, and then suddenly you're on for 3 minutes, and then you do all your interviews. It takes you about maybe an hour and a half, because that's what they do now. But I remember when you would go out on tour, you'd be out 15 to 25 days, and you would do 10 to 15 media appearances per day. And you got to know a lot of people in the business, the media, and you had a chance to really tell the story of what you were trying to offer, a book or whatever it might be. That is not the way it's done today, unfortunately. In any case, I'm always asked about why there are certain topics I don't go into. Do I not have an opinion on them? And there are certain topics you have not heard me discuss at all. You haven't heard me discuss the Democrat and Republican party politics and individual politicians and who's the hot one and who's not, and the presidential, national, and state elections, don't even talk about it. The controversies over election fraud or stealing votes from one party to the other, going clear back, never had a discussion on it. The Washington insider intrigues, don't care. It's all corrupt. I have nothing to do with it. Also, domestic politics in other countries, don't talk about it. And outside of science, avoiding opposing political ideological wars, which are constant, like Russiagate, never done a show on it. Controversies, let's say, like the right-wing Christianity versus the left-wing secularism, don't care. The January 6th, not a word on it. The mainstream news porn, I don't know how anybody can watch all this stuff and still have a brain left, but I don't. And aside from wokeism as a cultural movement, which I've written 23 articles against, I don't get into the various arguments regarding anything that they're dealing with, because it's not legitimate, in my opinion. So I'm not going to involve. And the politics of Israel and Zionism, I don't get into that. What I do, however, is I try to focus on the things that are really important that affect everyone. Things that will affect you, I don't care what your nationality, your color, your skin, your religious beliefs or not, it's going to impact you. Now, you can say, okay, that's interesting, or you can say, no, I'm not interested. Let me give you an example of what we're not discussing, we have no national dialogue on at all, and I'm going to show you the consequences. I'm going to play a clip now from the Wall Street Journal. It's a short clip, it's only 4 minutes, but you can also watch it by going to prn.live, scroll down to Gary Null in the notes, and then you'll click on and you can watch this so you can see the dried up Mississippi River. Now you might think, well, hey Gary, I live in Brooklyn, I can go down the street, any kind of food I want, I got, I order something online, I get it the next day, so what does this have to do with me? That's the key. As you'll see in a moment, it has everything to do with you.
The Mississippi River is drying up. Water levels are approaching record lows. Barges are getting stuck on sandbars in unprecedented numbers. Many ports and docks no longer have water deep enough for commercial boats to safely reach them. And this is a problem for the whole country.
The Mississippi River, a lot of people just think of it as this beautiful, large, historic river in the middle of the country. But really, it serves as a transportation highway for a lot of industry.
The river is a critical shipping route for agriculture, oil, and building materials. And the Mississippi watershed, which includes all the creeks, streams, and lakes that feed into the Mississippi River, is the largest in the U.S.
Farmers in Iowa, they harvest their soybeans and they put them on barges and send them down to the port below New Orleans, and then it's sent to China. Chemicals are processed in Louisiana and sent upriver to the Ohio to factories in Pittsburgh. The central part of this country thrives in part on industry moving goods and services up and down the river.
October is traditionally a month of low water on the Mississippi, but this year, the river's water levels are approaching lows not seen since 1988.
And if that's the case, the river at certain points is just going to shut down for commercial traffic.
The water has gotten so low that a shipwreck was exposed along the banks of the river in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, earlier this month. Archaeologists believe it sank in 1915. In recent weeks, there have been over 20 blockages on the river and backups of thousands of barges per day.
When a barge gets stuck on a sandbar, it's a real expensive mess. Another barge has to come. You have to bring equipment to remove that material and put it in another barge to the point where it will float enough so that it can get off the sandbar.
In some cases, the towboats, which pull dozens of barges each, have hit sandbars so hard that the barges they're towing disconnect. And that's dangerous for bridges and other boats. Riverboat cruises have also halted due to low water levels. Industry leaders say if water levels stay this low or get even lower, the tourism industry will take a massive hit. So what's causing the river to dry up?
It just did not get enough rain this year, particularly in the upper Ohio River Valley. Normally, this is hurricane season in the south. Some hurricanes will plow into the United States and then become enormous rainstorms that go up into the Ohio River Valley and dump a lot of rain. That didn't happen this year.
And industries that rely on the river to transport goods don't have many alternatives.
It's not as though a farmer can just run to the railroad and that solves the problem. The rail system is so pressed right now, and they have labor shortage issues. They have capacity issues that they're running into.
But sticking with the river will be costly for farmers. Normally, shipping along the Mississippi River is the cheaper option. But with fewer boats and barges able to transport goods, prices have shot up. For example, the cost of sending a ton of corn, soybeans, or other grains from St. Louis to southern Louisiana has jumped over 380% since October 2021. The fall harvest season, which usually peaks in October, is the busiest time for agricultural products.
If you can't get a rail line out, your soybeans are just sitting in an open field. I mean, a lot of farmers are hesitating to even harvest right now. But if they're Let's say there are massive rainstorms and your soybeans are just sitting out there. That could really, really, really be disastrous.
This disruption along the river comes at a time when the war in Ukraine has prompted huge demand for American agricultural products.
And farmers were very excited. They can't get their stuff to market. They can't get it to market, not easily and not cheaply.
Over the last few weeks, the U.S. Coast Guard has imposed restrictions on the depth that commercial boats and barges can sit in the water, and on the number of barges that tows can pull. Both actions are to try to stop barges and boats from getting stuck. But industry leaders say it's not enough.
There's no real answer except for the rain. There's hope that beginning around December, rain will start to fall in the Ohio River Valley to an extent where it'll start to bring that water back down to the Mississippi and things will get better. If not, we're all in a lot of trouble.
Let's look at this. Thousands of barges are now stuck. Now, I've gone down the Mississippi River, clear down to the mouth, and I wanted to see and film the dead zone down there, which is huge. And that's all because of all those phosphorus-based fertilizers. The nitrogen creates these algae blooms. The algae bloom takes over, and through a process of eutrophication, there's simply nothing that can live. There's no oxygen. The fish die. And this is also happening all around the state of Florida as the algae blooms go out, and then you end up with, well, last year there was this 40 miles of algae going clear out, the dead zone. You saw, I filmed on it. In fact, it's in my documentary, Last Call for Tomorrow. I showed you the whole west coast of Florida. Millions, hundreds of millions of dead fish and manatees because there's not enough oxygen. And then all those little inlets and the community of right outside of Naples. In fact, it's about, I think, about 10 miles from Naples. You have an entire community of canals. And now all those canals were nothing but algae. The trouble is those are algae blooms, and they put off a toxic chemical into the air. So people are getting all these upper respiratory tract infections, not realizing that's there. And then now you had the flesh-eating, because of the hurricane and because of all the damage, you had the flesh-eating bacteria. It's not only in the water, it's in the sand. Just to walk in the sand, you can end up getting that damn stuff on your body, and it can kill you. So this is a mess. Now, I just went over to the beach on Saturday. The farmer's market's not open now. And five blocks from the beach, all you see when you drive up, and I spent 3 hours driving up and down and up and down, clear over to the beach, and I get out and I walked on the beach, and I took a look. Now, there's one part of southern Florida that only has an equal in West Palm Beach. It's 2 miles long. It's called Port Royal. It's down outside of Naples, Florida. And it's the last civilized building or people living until you hit the Everglades, and then it's all Everglades from there down to the Key West. And normally these are mega mansions. Some are very old. Some have been there for decades. Beautiful properties, great architecture, and very expensive. And all you saw on the road was there's no grass. Why? Saltwater. Saltwater comes in. There was a 9-foot to an 18-foot surge. Okay, how high up off the beach are the mansions? About 4 feet. So let's just do the math. You've got a 4-foot, and then you've got an elevation, and you have your house, and the water comes in at 9 feet, 10 feet. That means anywhere from 4 to 6 feet of your house is going to be flooded. Now, here's what's interesting. I actually got out of the car and I was talking with people, anyone who would talk with me, because here's what you're going to see. I'd never seen this in my life, including being in multiple hurricanes. There's just gigantic piles of furniture. I mean, huge piles where it looks like they bulldozed them up or had a backhoe or a bobcat, and they lifted all this furniture from the mansions I'm talking about now and stacked them. It runs miles long. And it's just dirt because the salt water hits the grass and kills them. And some of those beautiful palm trees I've ever seen were on this 2-mile stretch in Port Royal, all dead. And the ones that weren't dead yet are dying. Why? Saltwater. Saltwater kills the root system, changes the bacteria, changes the biochemistry, and they die. So you saw thousands of, and that's just on one side of the street. That's just in one, two, every single property. Now, the houses themselves were still standing because they're made to high-level codes and lots of stone. But all the houses that were wood, gone. Just gigantic piles of wood and glass. And then the debris. It looked like nothing that could literally be equated to. And this went clear up 30 miles. I drove up 30 miles. And so then you start asking, do you have insurance? Well, I thought I had insurance, but, you know, it didn't cover for the water damage, cover for the wind damage. Okay, that's one of the games they play. A lot of insurance companies are going to go broke. A lot will deny coverage. And nobody was prepared. Now, when I say nobody was prepared, I mean I didn't talk with a single person, including the people whose homes they were out there. One guy was out there raking up all this dead grass, and he was ready to put down new grass. The sod truck was there, and that's expensive. And so I asked him, I said, I see all this furniture. I said, yeah, we lost all the furniture on the first floor. Why didn't you move it up to the second floor? If you just took all your furniture and possessions up to the second floor, it had been saved. Well, you don't think of those things. You don't think it'll be that bad. None of us thought it would be that bad. It was that bad. We're not talking about a little incident. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people are going to have their lives changed, because think of the people that are not rich, who cannot afford to build, and the insurance is not going to cover any of this crap. I mean, that's how bad the insurance companies is. I mean, they're really bad. Even on my own home, they canceled the insurance. I had to pay a premium just to get insurance, and I didn't have any damage. They don't care. So that means a lot of people are living in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, I'm giving that as an example of thinking that something can happen because it hasn't happened until it does, just like a heart attack or cancer or bankruptcy or divorce. We think in life there's wonderful passages, and the passages made all the better when we can relate with people of different backgrounds in different ways that make that moment that we're living through memorable, remarkable. But we also have to realize that in this life passage, we're going to have a lot of moments we don't like, that are not constructive, and we're going to have to survive them physically and emotionally. Now, just what happened yesterday? Remember when I told you that the reason I sold my apartment, one of the most beautiful apartments in all of South Beach, and I designed it myself, built it myself, I got a concrete block floor. That was it. Nothing there at all. Not a single thing. But at the end, after 6 months of designing everything and building it, I had what was a unique apartment. And yet, I gave it up. I walked away from it. Why? When I started seeing how far up the tide was coming, and then you'd see the tide in the morning, and I'd go out early in the morning before the sun rose to do my run on the beach, 10 miles, five up and five back, and I would see it coming in further and further and further until the day came when the seaweed was going up against the oceanfront hotel swimming pools, which are always at the back. And I'm thinking, this is not good, because that water has to go someplace. And when it comes up, a lot of it goes down through the sand. And what are all those buildings, tens of thousands of buildings on the west coast of Florida built on? Sand, not rock. That means that eventually the pull of the current and the shifting of the sand underneath these concrete stanchions that are resting on sand, it's going to give way and cause fractures, cracks, destabilization of the building. That's what happened a couple of years ago when that whole building collapsed and all those people died. And I said, this is just the beginning. You're going to have tens of thousands of buildings condemned. Yesterday, one of those buildings right over there in Miami was condemned for that very reason. So will that mean that people will start to pay attention where they're living? Unfortunately not. To the contrary, we're moving to Phoenix, Arizona, lots of people. And they're moving to a beautiful golf community in Idaho where there's no water at all. They have to pull it off of a dam up there in a lake, and it's going dry. And they've added their 12th golf course to make it all green using a huge amount of water in a desert. Why are they doing that? And these are wealthy people. The average cost of a house in this one community was $1.5 million. They're coming from California, so I guess whatever they didn't learn in California, they're continuing not to learn where they're moving. So there are consequences to not paying attention to what's occurring in the larger environment around you that could impact you. And to give you an idea of this, not only are you going to start getting shortages in food, in supplies, you're going to find a lot of stuff out of stock, and a lot of things that you had assumed they would never run out of, they've run out of. Because on those barges are things that are needed to build things and basic equipment. It's not going to get there. Okay, not a problem. Let's just take all the stuff that was on the barges and put them on trains or trucks. Trucks, good. Get them anywhere. As of today, we have approximately, give or take a few days, 23 days of diesel fuel left to buy in America, in the whole country. The government only has 1 million barrels of diesel in its national stockpile. Okay, but that's something. That's good. That's 6 hours supply. 6 hours. Well, surely we wouldn't be that careless. There wouldn't be any administration that would be that foolish that they wouldn't have had 100, 200, 300, 700 million barrels in storage, in caves. That's what they do now, 700 million of our essential gas or fuel to make gasoline. No, they've been using that. I see. So, okay, not a big deal. What runs on diesel? Well, my truck. I have a Ford 350, carries the big loads. Now, how many gallons was I able to get this morning? I'm talking about this morning, people. This morning. Early. There's already long lines of people. They were limiting people to a number of gallons. My diesel takes 30 gallons. The most going station to station to station I was able to get was 6 gallons of diesel, six containers of diesel. That's not even enough to fill up a truck. Okay. Well, fortunately, I have a small truck that runs on gas. So let's just say that we have to stop delivering things with diesel. That means all the trucks. That means everything all the trucks carry. That means a lot, all the major ways that we transport anything in the United States at a commercial level is diesel. Go to any construction site in the United States. It's not gasoline that they put in the backhoes and the giant cranes, all the construction material to tear down something or build something. It's all diesel. Something no one thought they would ever run out of. So now you have something being built for you, it stops. You have something being transported from point A to point B outside of a car or non-diesel vehicle, it's not going to happen. So now add in all of the barges in the Mississippi, thousands, that are stuck and can't go further. And you see the video, you see you can walk across this place. It's about the length of five football fields. That's how wide this is. This one place, it's just all dirt, no water. And we hope that water comes in the next 2 months. But think of all the farmers who are now going to go broke and lose their farms because all of their future income for this year was on that barge. And if you ever remember the movie East of Eden, Raymond Massey and James Dean and Dean Stockwell, well, he was a person who was a farmer, and he lost everything when he was shipping lettuce and a snowfall blocked the train and all of his stuff rotted. That was then. Today, farmers are faced with existential threats. Now you can say, well, okay, there are lots of farmers, so you know, if half the farmers go out of business, I'll still get something to eat. I don't have to get concerned about any of this, do I? I don't know if you want to be concerned or not, but you should start learning to get off the grid and do more for yourself because, yes, farmers are hit now. They're hit around the world. All the products that are going on that barge down to New Orleans to be shipped out to other countries where they need that for food, basic, just a staple food. Some countries in Africa, they're only eating one or two different items that give them any protein. Now, that's going to impact them. So in the next 12 months, you're going to see food shortages, material shortages that would otherwise build things that we normally take for granted can always get our hands on. I just placed an order for something the other day. It would normally take about 8 weeks maximum to get it, sometimes 4 weeks. I'm told it's a year. A year? Why? The difficulty in getting the product from point A to point B, and then the long backup in the ocean of container ships, and then getting it. How are you going to get it if you don't have diesel? This is what we're facing today. And that's why I focus on the big issues that are important. And I don't involve myself in the other issues, which, by the way, anyone who has an opinion probably has an opinion just as valid as my own on any given issue. I'm just telling you, please pay attention to what's happening around the world because sooner or later it will impact you. All right? What's my suggestion? Become aware of these issues. Don't say, well, with hubris, I don't need to involve myself with that because I got other things more important. Okay, let's see how important it is when you don't have enough clean drinking water, which we don't right now. And ask the 5,000 communities in the United States whose drinking water is as toxic as that in Flint, Michigan. Yeah, 5,000 communities have drinking water as toxic as Flint, nothing being done. So what, are we just going to drink toxic water? We're going to wait for from Silicon Valley to come rescue us? They're not. Just make yourself aware. then do the best that you can, get off the grid. Then try to get yourself to a place where you have mobility. My suggestion is, just a suggestion, that if you can sell your house and make enough money so you have some savings, then get yourself an RV, a good quality RV, used, not a big one, and you can get them, because there's going to be a rush on RVs. And when the housing market collapses, which will be starting probably in the next quarter, they're already down as much as 20% in certain areas of the United States. In other areas, they'll go up because there's a greater demand to want to live in certain places than in others. But for the average person who has a mortgage, and a big mortgage, I'd sell. Personally, that's what I would do. A nice RV, you can drive anywhere. There are 1,500 intentional communities you can visit. You can go where it's a good place to be, and there are a lot of good places in this great country to be, and a lot of nice people to be around. But if you're waiting on the beach and hoping that there won't be any more hurricanes, there will be. And if you're hoping that we'll get our diesel fuel, we won't, not before there's a crisis. And that could have been prevented. That's your body politic right now, and how absolutely corrupt it is. And by the way, this should never have had to happen. This was entirely predictable. We've predicted this. Someone else who predicted it is Tulsi Gabbard. Now, she's quit the Democratic Party, and that is immaterial to me, and she's becoming an independent, and that's immaterial to me. What was material was that she was purely political. She was voted into Congress. She was a female. She was from an indigenous culture in Hawaii. She fought in Afghanistan, Iraq, and she wanted peace now. And they put her in there and groomed her to be the next hotshot Democrat, possibly even in time running for president. She saw the corruption within the system. She spoke out about it. They began to attack her. And now that she's gone rogue on him and is talking about what she knows, in effect, she's become a whistleblower. They're not having any of that. They're attacking her. Why is this important? Because we need, in America, we need a legitimate third and fourth and fifth party. We need a populist party. We need a freedom party. We need people who are not politicians to run for office to represent the people without being influenced by special interest that captures almost everyone in the body politic, left or right, doesn't matter. That's why it doesn't matter who really is in the White House, because they're all controlled by outside sources. Here's Tulsi Gabbard explaining briefly in about 45 seconds why she left the Democratic Party.
No longer remain in today's Democratic Party that's under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers who are driven by cowardly wokeness, who divide us by racializing every issue and stoking anti-white racism, who actively work to undermine our God-given freedoms that are enshrined in our Constitution, who are hostile to people of faith and spirituality, who demonize the police but protect criminals at the expense of law-abiding Americans, who believe in open borders, who weaponize the national security state to go after their political opponents, and above all, who are dragging us ever closer to nuclear war. Now, I believe in a government that's of the people,
that's a part of
by
film,
the people,
Gary, that's
and
not gonna,
for
you're not gonna
the
be able
people.
To break that up today.
Unfortunately, today's Democratic Party does not. Instead, it stands for a government that is of, by, and for the powerful elite. Now, I'm calling on my fellow common sense, independent-minded Democrats to join me in leaving the Democratic Party. If you can no longer stomach the direction that the so-called woke Democratic Party ideologues are taking our country, then I invite you to join me.
We need people to walk away from the Republican and Democratic parties because they're both completely corrupt. It wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter, and it hasn't mattered. I played you a clip of Noam Chomsky talking about the corruption of the last series of presidents going clear back to to Dwight Eisenhower. He could have also gone back and showed Woodrow Wilson utterly corrupt and FDR corrupt also. So we want someone to be something they're not. It was F. Somerset Maugham in his great essays who said, never allow the public behind the curtain, because it was the illusion that they appreciated, not the reality. You only get them angry. And unfortunately, we have no transparency. We have all forms of denial of the truth. I want to read you something now. We have, I'm going to ask, there was a interview with Chuck Todd over at NBC. He's a very powerful person there. And he's kind of like the cheerleader. He leads all the other people on what they're going to attack, what they're going to believe, what they're going to promote. And he was promoting in the most intense manner, get your vaccines. You know, and he was angry at anyone who didn't. And he made a statement, if we can find it, that it's only the unvaccinated that are going to get COVID and die. Whoa, was he wrong? And I want to read this to you before we go to Richard Gallo standing by. This is an article posted by Dr. Robert Malone, but it's called Vaccine Damaged in Australia. And this is by Tyson Ellingworth. Quote, the Australian medical and health system has failed me and is now actively destroying the right to choose a treatment and the doctor-patient relationship. And what is concerning is that they are now coming for you too. My name is Tyson Ellingworth. I am an award-winning international composer, songwriter, and sound designer. The music industry and my fans know me by my artist name of TYDI, and I've been a musician, composer for 20 years. Never in my wildest dreams, or more precisely my nightmares, did I expect that I would find myself where I am today. Instead of touring and being interviewed by my latest show and track and album, I'm receiving daily media invitations to talk about my fight to regain my health after being injured and paralyzed by the Moderna vaccine. It's important to know that I am pro-evidence-based science and that the vaccine was safe for me. I believed wholeheartedly that I was doing the right thing by getting vaccinated. I had complete faith and trust in my country, Australia, its leadership and medical system. That is, until I suffered a severe adverse reaction that left me helpless, paralyzed, and with no help from doctors or my government. Before the pandemic hit, I lived in California for 10 years, and like many others, in 2021, I soon found my life came to a standstill, and I had to move back to Australia. In October that same year, I received my first vaccination. Within days, I started to feel severe and unbearable shooting pain and paralysis in my hands and feet. I contacted a globally well-respected spinal surgeon for advice, and his reply scared me like nothing before. Quote, this can only be evidence of a catastrophic neurological failure, end quote. Shortly afterwards, I was rushed to a hospital where I stayed for 2 weeks. I was in disbelief and became depressed because I couldn't believe the vaccine could do this to me, especially when we were all told it was safe and effective, and if there was a reaction to it, it would be minor. If this was not enough, while in the hospital, I was under the care of a highly rude and dismissive neurologist who repeatedly told me, quote, there's no way this is the vaccine's fault. Over time, my condition worsened. I asked the doctors at the hospital if I would ever walk properly again, and they would not give me an answer because they were perplexed too. It was a surreal and lonely experience learning how to walk again. I had no one to turn to who could understand me and gave me answers. Before I was released from hospital, the neurologist strongly advised me to get a second vaccine and said, quote, if you don't get the second one, the first one will be redundant, end quote. I acted on the neurologist's advice and ended up taking the second vaccine only a month after my first. In hindsight, I can't believe I listened to her as I have always thought of myself as a critical thinker, and instead I took advice from a doctor who had no regard for my personal situation. She refused to listen to me and has been disingenuous. Shortly after the second shot, my injuries were further exacerbated, and I was unable to move. My hands felt like they were on fire. I struggled to get through the day. I was rushed to the hospital once again and thought my life was over. There was no hope for me. In January 2022, I ended up catching COVID-19. I woke up at around 3:50 a.m. gasping for breath, fearing for my life. I called the emergency and said, "If you don't get here now, I will die." An ambulance arrived quickly and I was rushed to the ER. From there, I was taken to a COVID ward where I would spend the next 2 weeks struggling to breathe, fighting fevers and shaking and crawling to the bathroom with no help. Even though I often cried for help, I heard the nurses laughing and talking in the hallway. Hours would pass, and when I was unable to take the pain anymore, I would hobble to the door in my room, open it, and was immediately met with a loud scream from nurses, "Shut the F door. You're a biohazard." This was not the Australia I had known. It was heartbreaking to witness nurses and doctors treating vulnerable patients in this way. I was not alone. They abandoned everyone who was in the COVID ward. I honestly do not know how I made it through those 2 weeks in isolation. I clearly remember looking out my window at an enormous palm tree, and that's all that I could see. By a miracle, I am grateful to survive. I survived. However, the combination of my vaccine injury and getting COVID took me into a dark abyss for a period of time, and all I know is this. I now have permanent degenerative disease of my spinal cord. I wake up every day in agony and require high doses of painkillers to function adequately. The Australian medical and health system is quick to demolish the reputation of anyone who questions the vaccines or suggests other safe drugs. And it goes on from there. So Chuck Todd and Rachel Maddow and everyone else who was really strong in promoting the vaccine and attacking anyone who challenged the safety and efficacy of the vaccine, could you do this? Could you take responsibility for everyone that listened or watched you and said, "Okay, I'm going to do what they say"? After all, they're powerful, they're educated, they have multiple connections within the medical and scientific community. They can find out something I couldn't in a heartbeat. Surely they wouldn't misguide us. They did. Now, we have Richard Gale on the phone, and I asked Richard to do the following. This Anthony Fauci said something, and we have the tape, and you will hear it on our next program. It's about 12 minutes long, and boy, will you hear stuff that will make your head turn. How they took these beagle puppies, young little beagles, and they put them into an environment where they allowed flies to eat their face until they died. Flies killed these beagle pups, and it was all under Anthony Fauci. That's a guy you trust? Someone who kills innocent dogs? Well, if a person's willing to allow their actions to kill a dog, why should they inconvenience if it happens to be a person using a drug they're promoting, like remdesivir, one of the most toxic drugs you could ever take? He said that when asked, "Is there any association between vaccines and autism?" He said, "Absolutely, positively not. There's no connection whatsoever." All right, that's his opinion. However, we don't deal in these opinions. We deal in real science. Richard Gale's here to share the real science. Richard, show the real science, specifically showing Anthony Fauci doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, and he should be held accountable for crimes against humanity, as all these journalists should be, for promoting the ultimate in unsafe and unproven therapies. Now show us what the actual science shows about vaccination and autism. The forum is yours.
Yes, Gary. I'd like to just first give just a quick overview, because right now we're still seeing the autism rates go up, just so people have a kind of a sense of this. And right now, if you were to go to the CDC site, they would say that 1 in 44 people now have autism or diagnosed with autism. That's a CDC figure, but for the same year, this is 2020, it was the last actual figures that were given out. So Johns Hopkins University would place that at 134 individuals. So we can compare that with just 7 years ago. In 2015, it was 1 in 68. And if we go back to 1995, it was 1 in 500. So clearly, this issue of rising autism rates has not subsided at all. It continues to increase. And sometimes, you know, it's more can be revealed, as I like to say, by sins of omission, rather than just simply recounting a lot of the science papers making various claims. Vaccines causing autism, although I will mention that. But we should also look that if I'm a person of authority who people look up to for leadership or guidance, I could pull any rabbit out of the hat and people will blindly accept it. So if CNN or MSNBC, they say the vaccines don't cause autism, well, if I'm somebody who will turn CNN or MSNBC on to get my news, I do so because I accept that the info that I'm being given is accurate. So I'll believe it, although it could be completely made up, it could be spun, or it could be outright lie. So if we just kind of take that idea of the sense of omission, there was in 2020, just almost 2 years ago, the CDC very quietly and unknown to most people, they removed the heading from their vaccine safety page that stated in the beginning the vaccines do not cause autism. It was silently removed. And the thing here was that in a year earlier, ICON, the organization, they were submitting a lot of Freedom of Information Acts requests to the CDC to produce studies that they were using to make the claims that certain vaccines did not cause autism. I mean, if you're going to make these kind of claims, well, you must have some kind of a robust body of science to support your conclusion. So they were pushing, they put forth these Freedom of Information Acts, particularly for the DTP vaccine, which includes the pertussis, and for the hepatitis B and the Haemophilus influenza, the pneumococcal vaccine, and polio. Okay, and they were asking for any studies to support, oh, and also any studies they had to support the cumulative exposure of these vaccines, since children are getting 30-odd number of vaccines in their 6 months of life. Well, do you have any studies to support that after getting exposed to all these vaccines that it does not cause autism within the first 6 months? And there was never any response from the CDC. It went on. So ICON sued the agency. And the complaint goes, it stated that given the CDC's broad, unequivocal assertions that vaccines do not cause autism, that they're, as I said, there must be some kind of robust body of science to support that. Eventually, the CDC did submit studies. They submitted 20 studies. This was a lawsuit that was filed in a district New York court. And so none of the studies that they provided were what ICANN was actually requesting. I mean, the majority of them concern thimerosal. And I don't want to get into the thimerosal autism debate too much, because thimerosal has been removed, and it has been removed from the flu vaccine, which was the last one that had the thimerosal. What happened, they did put in for the measles, mumps, and rubella. There were five. ICON did not request information for the MMR. And then they were also putting in, they added some studies regarding antigens, but not to vaccine exposure. So even what the CDC had provided had nothing to do with the actual Freedom of Information request. The one interesting thing was that the CDC's list included an Institute of Medicine, an IOM, review of all the different studies and that did look at the DTP vaccine. And their conclusion was that the evidence, they didn't have any studies to show that it doesn't cause autism. What their state says that the studies have shown that there is the evidence is inadequate to accept or reject a causal relationship between the DTP and vaccines, a vaccine and autism. So really what this kind of tells us is that going back to the CNN analogy, that they can say anything they want, pull any kind of a rabbit out of the hat, and people will just, you know, blindly believe and accept it. So here you have an actual case where the CDC was unable to provide any studies to show that there was no association between the certain vaccines that have been implicated in causing autism. And we can get to that because these are vaccines that include aluminum. And we're seeing more and more research now that it is aluminum that is particularly the research coming out of the University of Kiel in England and the University of British Columbia, where Christopher Shaw is doing all this work. There's a lot of studies emerging on this relationship between the aluminum adjuvant and vaccines, which is still widely used, and autism. For so long, we were just looking at thimerosal, the mercury, and that dominated, of course, the conversation. But now that thimerosal has basically been removed, we're still seeing these rates of autism going up. So it wasn't just the thimerosal. There was something else as well. So if we look at some of these studies, I think, and I don't want to, again, I don't want to speak too much on the thimerosal study, but there is there was the aluminum-induced entropy in biological systems and implications for neurological disease study that came from Christopher Shaw. And the conclusion in that study that was published in the Journal of Toxicology was that all these findings of plausibility implicate the aluminum adjuvants of pediatric vaccines as causal factors contributing to increased rates of autism spectrum disorders. And this was a nation study in studies where multiple doses are almost universally administered. One study I thought was quite interesting was came out of, I've got so many studies up here, but there was one that was done out of Korea. And it engaged, because Korea has a, they have a higher rate of vaccination than the U.S. does. There are certain vaccines like Japanese encephalitis and all that they have vaccines for. That's not a disease that affects us in America. So they actually have more studies. And this was a study that was looking at various blood levels, but they were looking both at mercury, because they do include mercury in their vaccines, as well as the aluminum. And their conclusion was that we found that the blood levels of mercury and aluminum levels at late pregnancy and early childhood were associated with more autistic behaviors in children at 5 years of age. Important study because of the fact that many pregnant women continue to get vaccinated, and many of these heavy metals will cross the placenta barrier and could have a direct effect on the neurological development of the fetus during pregnancy. This is an area of study that we need that much more research needs to be done in, because I think that's an area of research that is absolutely crucial and critical, is the just the amount of toxic exposure that pregnant women are exposed to. There was a study, another study was metabolic brain disease. This was looking at aluminum and the development of chronic neuropathology. And it was here, this the conclusions in this. This was University of Arkansas. Their conclusions in that study was it's recommended that the use of aluminum salts in immunizations should be discontinued, that adults should take steps to minimize their exposure to environmental aluminum. So there's another one. And I can go on. There's many, many studies, Gary. I don't know if you want me to share
I need real short answer because we're running out of time. Approximately how many scientific studies exist showing a correlation between vaccines and some form of neurological disadvantage or disruption, or including autism?
Well, I've got a list of 157, but that ends at 2017. So
okay, that's fine. Then there's more, but Fauci said there's zero, and you have 157 at least. Secondly, is it true that the vaccine injury court that people have to get into, and which is very difficult, has given billions of dollars in vaccine damage, including specifically for neurological damage, mentioning the word autism as one of the reasons they were being compensated?
There's only two court cases that where the word autism was specifically used, where compensation was given. There's the one very famous one. This is word games again, because now if people are getting compensated for encephalitis or neurodevelopmental disorders, this is all like just word mush. And so you could substitute, obviously, and I can speak, from kind of experience in my family with having an autistic brother. But of course autism wasn't used back in the 1950s. And that was from the pertussis vaccine, but, encephalitis was commonly used. And then, if you have encephalitis, if it gets encephalitis and their temperature goes up to 107, yeah, it's going to fry a lot of neurons. And your child can have autism. So you can kind of substitute sometimes encephalitis with autism.
Okay, that's all we needed to know. Anthony Fauci has made his presentation. It was absolute, unequivocal, that there was no relationship. And yet the government's own agency in the Justice Department has paid out benefits to victims of families who have been diagnosed with brain damage, including autism. And we have 157 studies minimally on our side. He has zero on his side. And yet this is someone that people still trust. Thank you, Richard Gale. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for Utrecht's Lead.